with Henry. It is by Sherry's Playhouse.
Gather round, ladies and gentlemen, listen up, boys and girls. This is Everett Roberts welcoming you to Three Hearts Warming, soul-stirring tales of yesteryear, tonight's inaugural installment of the O. Henry Radio Hour. But first, let's meet the man himself, our host, O. Henry, the most popular, the most beloved of all spinners of American tales. But wait, O. Henry died in 1910, you say? No problem. Through the alchemy of radio, the master storyteller of Baghdad on the subway is being channeled right now on the O. Henry Radio Hour through local stage luminary. Take it away, O. Henry! And thank you, and welcome all you listeners to Madison Square. Well, you know, this isn't the biggest park in Manhattan. Well, not by a long shot. Well, but it's one of the prettiest. I live just a few blocks away. I come here a lot, especially on Sunday afternoons in the springtime. Why, it's my favorite neighborhood park. Birds in the trees, and the bees as the bees. Birds among the flowers along the paths. The children have chosen to reach its legs. Well, I feel like I own this place. The Disney's of Madison Square give me a lot of ideas for my short stories. But when the stairs all making a racket, I hear a lot as I stroll. I hear even more when I'm sitting on a bench, reading a newspaper and minding my own business. Oh, that's what folks think I'm doing. But what I'm really minding is their business. I'm a silent partner in their mundane, but frequently funny and oddly touching lives. Well, let's face it, folks. People don't whisper in Madison Square. Nobody knows this isn't a library. Watch. I see a young couple coming this way. He's handsome, and she's... Well, it's hard to tell what she looks like. Her face is hidden behind a black veil, which matches the rest of her outfit. All sit on this bench... Hide behind my newspaper and set my trap.
Oh, I'm so happy you consented to take a turn with me, Miss Conway.
A walk after dinner aids digestion, Papa says.
Your Papa is one smart man.
Thank you, Mr. Donovan.
Do you like Mrs. Scott's boarding house, Miss Conway?
My hall meets my needs.
I think the food is particularly excellent. Not as good as my mama makes, of course, but still.
The mutton tonight was delicious.
It's a fine evening for walking, don't you think?
It is to them who have the heart to enjoy it, Mr. Donovan.
Oh, would you care to sit down?
Why, thank you, Mr. Donovan.
If I'm not mistaken... You appear to be in mourning. I noticed at dinner how graceful you were, how dainty, how skillful at lifting your fork. Why, even your water glass, even your napkin under your veil.
It isn't easy, Mr. Donovan.
No, I'm sure it isn't, Miss Conway. I mean, I do hope none of your relatives, I hope you haven't sustained a loss.
Death has claimed, not a relative, but one who... But I shouldn't intrude my grief on you on such a lovely evening, Mr. Donovan.
Intrude? Why say, Miss Conway? I'd be delighted. That is to say, I'd be sorry. I mean, nobody would sympathize with you truer than I would.
Laugh and the world laughs with you. That's what Papa says. But weep and, well, weep and they laugh at you anyway. That's what life has taught me, Mr. Donovan.
Oh, I would never laugh at your distress, Miss Conway.
I have no relatives or acquaintances in New York. But you have been so nice to me in the 2 weeks I've been at Mrs. Scott. You passed me the pepper 4 times at the table. That was kind of you.
It is tough to be alone in New York, that is for sure. They would say, when this overgrown small town does loosen up and get friendly, it goes to the limit.
I'll be more receptive to the charms of the city once I...
So bold as to inquire about your loss, so I can sympathize with you all the more, and you know...
He was my fiancé.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
We were going to be married this fall. Please don't think I'm stringing you along, Mr. Donovan, but he was a real count.
A real count?
Not all counts are real, Mr. Donovan.
Oh, I'm sure they are, Miss Conway.
He was a real count with a real castle in Italy. Count Fernando Mazzini, that was his name. I never saw the beat of him for elegance.
You were so fortunate, Miss Conway. This makes it all the harder for me to even aspire to...
Papa objected, of course. We tried to elope once, but Papa overtook us and took me back. I thought, sure, Papa and Fernando would come to blows. Papa has a livery business in Poughkeepsie, you know.
I remember. You mentioned it when I passed you the pepper the second time.
Finally, Papa came round. He said we may be married this fall. Fernando showed him proofs of his title and wealth, and then went over to Italy to fix up the castle. Papa's very proud, Mr. Donovan. When Fernando wanted to give me several thousands of dollars for my trousseau, Papa called Fernando down something awful. He wouldn't even let me accept a ring or any presents from him. It was all I could do to keep Papa from challenging Fernando to a duel.
Oh, my.
But why, Mr. Donovan? Am I burdening you with all this?
Oh, please go on, Miss Conway. It's your way of coping with your loss. Now, I am so fortunate you have chosen me as your confidant.
Well, anyway, when Fernando sailed for Italy, I moved to New York and found my present position as a cashier in a candy store. 3 days ago, I got a letter from Italy. Papa forwarded it from Poughkeepsie. The letter said that Fernando had been killed in a gondola accident.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That is awful. I cannot begin to tell you.
The gondolier got distracted and knocked Fernando overboard with his pole. Fernando couldn't swim. He drowned.
Couldn't anybody rescue him?
Apparently not.
Why, that is dreadful, Miss Conway. Words cannot express.
That's why I'm in deep mourning. My heart, Mr. Donovan, will remain forever dedicated to Fernando's memory.
Couldn't they... Why couldn't they fish him out of the canal?
He just disappeared.
How very odd.
He disappeared without a trace, except for the scars deep in my heart.
How unspeakably tragic, I mean.
They drained all the canals in Venice, but to no avail. The letter said the dying fish smelled terrible.
I can imagine. I mean, I can't imagine what happened to your count, but...
Do you know what I think, Mr. Donovan?
What, Miss Conway?
I think God reached down from heaven and scooped Fernando right out of that canal when nobody was looking. I think Fernando's in God's hands now.
May he rest in peace, Miss Conway.
I guess I'm poor company, Mr. Donovan. I can't take interest in anyone. I shouldn't keep you from your friends. They can entertain you and laugh with you. I can't. Perhaps you would prefer to walk back to the house now.
I am awfully sorry. And no, I don't think we should walk back to the house just yet. Please don't say you don't have a friend in this city, Miss Conway. I want to believe I'm worthy enough to be your friend. Oh, please don't cry. Here, take my hand.
Thank you, Mr. Donovan. I want to show you something. I know it's in my purse somewhere. Oh, here it is. This is Fernando's photographic likeness. I never showed it to anybody. I'm showing it to you, Mr. Donovan, because I believe you are a true friend. Why are you staring at it? Perhaps I was too forward in showing it to you.
Oh, no, you did the right thing, Mrs. Conway. Your fiancé, late fiancé, that is, looks intelligent, commanding. A fine specimen of manhood, I'd say. That is the face of a strong, cheerful man who might well be a leader among his fellows.
This is all I have to remind me of Fernando. This, plus a single glove he left in the cab last time I saw him. I sleep with that glove in my pillow slip. Fernando will forever be present in my heart.
Would it be too much to hope that someday I might supplant Fernando in your affections?
Well, perhaps someday, Mr. Donovan, but it's much too early to contemplate that now.
You need to get your mind off your grief occasionally, Miss Conway. Would you honor me with the pleasure of your company at Coney Island next Sunday afternoon?
If you think it would help, Mr. Donovan. Boy, would I ever.
Oh, there you are. Oh, well, here I am, seated on the same bench, hiding behind my newspaper, and minding other people's business as usual. When who should plop down on the other bench but one Mr. Donovan? Oh, he's lost in thought. Wonder what he's up to. Oh, wait. Oh, here comes Miss Conway. Well, at least I think it's Miss Conway. She's still dressed in black, but without the veil now. Oh, she is prettier than I imagined.
What's the matter, Andy? I've known you for a month. We've been engaged for a week, and I've never seen you as solemn and grouchy as you are this evening.
Nothing, Maggie.
I know better. I can tell.
Forget it, Maggie.
May I sit down?
Of course.
You've never acted this way before. Tonight, I had to ask you 3 times to pass the mayonnaise. What is it, Andy?
Forget it, I said.
I don't want to forget it, and I do want to know. I'll bet you're thinking about some other girl.
No, you don't understand.
Why don't you go and get her if you want her?
I tell you then, but I don't think you're going to understand it exactly. Let me hold your hand.
Oh, please don't.
There. Now this will make it easier to say what I have to say. You've heard of Big Mike, haven't you?
Big who?
Big Mike Sullivan, everybody calls him.
No, I haven't heard of him. And I don't want to know him if he makes you act this way. Who is he?
Why, he's the biggest man in New York. He's a wizard in the political line. He's a mile high and as broad as the East River. Why, you say anything against Big Mike, Maggie, you'll have 1 million men trying to break your collarbone in 2 seconds.
Oh, no.
Why, Big Mike made a visit over the old country in Europe a while back, and the kings took to their holes like rabbits.
Kings like rabbits?
Well, Big Mike, he's a friend of mine. I'm nothing compared to Big Mike, as far as influence goes in this town, but Mike's as good a friend to the little man as he is to the big man. I ran into Big Mike today on the Bowery, and what do you think he does?
What, Andy?
Comes up and shakes hands. Just like that. Andy, he says, I've been keeping my eyes on you. You've been putting in some good licks over your side of the street, and I'm proud of you. We were standing in front of a saloon, and he invited me inside. Where are you drinking? He says. Well, whatever you're having, I told him. He orders highball, offers me a cigar, and lights it.
So why are you so solemn, Andy?
I told Big Mike I was going to get married in 2 weeks. Andy, he says, send me an invite. I'll come to the wedding. That's what Big Mike says to me, and he always does what he says.
Well, of course we can invite him to the wedding.
But you don't understand, Maggie. I would have one of my hands cut off to have Big Mike Sullivan at our wedding. It would be the proudest day of my life. When Big Mike goes to a man's wedding, you know the bridegroom has it made for life. Now, maybe that is why I'm looking so.
Let's invite him then, if it's so important to you.
There's a reason why I can't. There's a reason he can't be there. Please don't ask me. I can't tell you.
Oh, I don't care. It's something about politics, I know, but that's no reason why you can't smile at me.
Hey, do you think as much of me as you do with your Count Mazzini?
Oh, Andy.
There. Oh, rest your head on my shoulder. There now, it can't be that bad.
Andy, I've lied to you.
Lied?
Lied, yes, lied. Now you'll never want to marry me. You won't love me anymore.
There now.
I've got to tell you, Andy, that there never was so much as a little finger of a count in my life. I've never had a beau in my life. The other girls had beaus. They talked about them all the time. That seemed to make fellows like them even more.
Andy, I don't know what to say, except that...
Don't say anything, Andy. Just say I look swell in black. You know I do.
Black is your color, Maggie.
Thank you. I feel better already. Anyway, I went out to a photograph shop and bought that picture and had it framed. I don't even know who that man is. I made up that story about the Count, Andy, and about his being drowned so I could wear black.
Oh, I just don't know what to...
I know nobody can love a liar. You'll shake me off, Andy, and I'll die of heartbreak and shame. There's never been anybody in my life I like but you. And now I've wrecked my future. Oh, Andy, can you ever forgive me?
Sure. Sure. It's all right, dear. Hey, back to the stinking canal, I say. Down for the count. You've straightened everything out, Maggie. We can invite Big Mike to our wedding after all.
Andy, did you believe that story about the Count?
Of course not.
You didn't?
Well, not after I saw that picture, I didn't.
Why not, dear?
Because it's Big Mike's photograph in that silver frame of yours.
Oh, hello there again. Oh, did Maggie and Andy's engagement survive the lie? Well, are you kidding? Did our two lovebirds tie the knot? Or need you ask? Now, don't be surprised if a year later, Maggie and Andy are pushing the fanciest baby carriage you ever saw through Madison Square. Oh, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. I have other fish to fry. Andy and Maggie weren't the only lovebirds with ruffled feathers that perfumed day in May, bright with wonder in Madison Square. Oh, not by a long shot. Well, I wonder what that young lady is doing by herself on that bench with her nose stuck in a book. Oh, she's too pretty to sit by herself alone. Wait, a handsome young man has come to stop at the bench opposite her. He's glancing at her, fleetingly, I'd say, and she studiously avoids him. I wonder what that young lady is up to. Oh, the plot thickens. A street urchin lugs a huge suitcase down the path and drops it at the young man's feet. And hot dog, I have a ring-sized seat across the path to observe it all. Look with my newspaper, and on with the story.
You see that young lady, kid?
Yes, sir.
I want you to take her a message. Tell her I'm about to catch a train to San Francisco, or I'll be joining a moose hunting expedition to Alaska. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Tell her that since she won't let me speak to her or write to her, I'm using you as a go-between. one final effort to make amends. Can you remember that?
Yes, sir.
Tell her she can't discard me like an old shoe without telling me why or giving me a chance to explain. That's not like her at all.
Yes, sir.
Okay, wait. Here's a silver dollar. Tell her I've disobeyed her injunction because I think deep down in her heart, she wants to see justice done.
Is it real, sir?
You don't have to bite it, son. Of course it's real. Now, go on, be off with you.
Yes, sir.
Well, don't just stand there staring. What do you want?
Lady, that gent on the other fence over there sent you a song and dance by me. If you don't know the guy, and he's trying to do the Johnny act on you, say the word, and I'll call a cop in 3 minutes. If he does know him, and he's on the square, I'll spill you the bunch of hot air he sent you.
A song and dance? Well, that's a new one on the troubadour line. I used to know the gentleman who sent you, so it won't be necessary to call the police. Go ahead with your song and dance, but not too loud. It's too early in the year for open-air vaudeville. We don't want to attract attention.
You know what I mean, lady. Train of vaudeville turn. It's a win. He told me to tell you he's got his collars and cuffs in that grip for a scoop clean out to Frisco. Then he's going to shoot snowbirds in the Klondike. He says you told him not to send round no more pink notes or come hanging over the garden gate. He takes this means of putting you wise. He says you throw him out like garbage. He says you never gave him the chance to kick at the decision. He says you swiped him and never said why.
I wish he'd stop stealing glances at me. Well, you tell the gentleman that I have studied my heart as well as one can. And I know its weaknesses as well as its needs. And that is why I decline to hear his pleas, whatever they may be. I do not condemn him through hearsay or doubtful evidence. That is why I made no charge. But since he seems bent on hearing what he already knows, you may tell him again. Are you sure you're understanding what I'm telling you?
Yes, ma'am.
Tell him I entered the conservatory that evening through the back door to cut a rose for my mother. Tell him I saw him and Miss Ashburton beneath the pink oleander. The picture, it was very pretty, but the pose and juxtaposition of him and Miss Ashburton could lead to only one conclusion. I didn't just leave the conservatory that night. I left the rose and with it my hopes and dreams for a future husband. Do you understand?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you may take that song and dance to your impresario.
I'm shy on one word, lady. Put me wise on that, will you?
Juxtaposition, or you may call it propinquity, if you like. It means too close for comfort to maintain an idea. Now go. But wait! Here's a shiny silver coin for your pain. It's real, but it's also filthy, so take it out of your mouth.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, what'd she say, kid?
The lady says that she's on the facts that gals is dead easy when a fella comes spewing ghost stories and trying to make up. That's why she won't listen to no soft soap. She says she caught you in the act hugging a bunch of calico in the hothouse. She sidestepped in to pull a posy and sees you squeezing the other gal to beat the band. She says it looks cute all right, but it made her stick. She says you better get busy and make the break for the train.
In that case, here, give this letter to the young lady and ask her to read it. Tell her it should explain the situation to her satisfaction. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Tell her that if she had mingled a little trust with her conception of the ideal suitor, much heartache might have been avoided. Tell her that the loyalty that she... that she prizes so much in me has never wavered. Are you sure you can tell her all this, kid?
Yes, sir.
Good. Tell her I'm waiting for an answer. Now go. Why are you still standing there?
Please, sir.
Oh, I see. You're worse than a hungry dog at a picnic. Here's another coin for your pains. Now I'll figure.
Yes, sir. Lady, the gent says you put a bum wrap on him without no cause. He says he no bum guy. Here's a letter he sent you. Lady, you read that letter, and I'll bet you he's smelling sweeter than that rose you left in the hothouse.
Let me see that.
Dear Dr. Arnold, I want to thank you for your most kind and opportune aid to my daughter last Friday evening when she was overcome by an attack of her old heart trouble in the conservatory of Mrs. Waldron's reception. Had you not been near to catch her as she fell and render proper medical attention, we might have lost her. I would be glad if you call on us and undertake treatment of her case. Gratefully yours, Robert Ashburton.
The gent wants an answer, lady. What's the word?
Here's a gold piece for my go-between.
Thank you, ma'am.
Tell the gentleman that his girl wants him. Tell him he can sit beside me now. Did you tell him?
I heard that.
Oh, you better believe that young man sprinted to her side more fast than the jackrabbit. Well, he didn't zigzag either.
Hey, mister, what do you want me to do with this ton of bricks?
Grab your burden and follow us.
Oh, well, you never saw a couple happier than the one that paraded out of Madison Square that day, followed by an urchin dragging a suitcase almost as big as he was every step of the way. Well, that's two pairs of lovebirds down, but life in Madison Square, or even on a bright Sunday in springtime, doesn't always have a happy ending. Well, take that man slouched on the bench over there, unkempt, threadbare, his hat tattered. Well, surely he'll never see 40 again. He doesn't look like the matrimonial material to me. Oh, wait, now things are picking up. Well, who's that fashionable young man who just sat down on the far on the other side of the bench and possible to get? Why, he can't be over 25, and he keeps glancing at his watch, then at the clock tower at the edge of the park. Oh, time to hide behind my shield, my newspaper, that is, once again.
I beg your pardon, young man, but I perceive you are disturbed in mind.
You do, huh?
Permit me to introduce myself. Prince Michael, heir to the throne of Valjuna.
Yeah, you don't say.
Yes, I do say, my prominent friend. I appear incognito, of course, as you may gather from my appearance. It pleases me to render aid to others whom I think worthy of. Perhaps the matter that distresses you is one that would readily yield to our mutual efforts to resolve.
Well, well. Well, glad to meet you, Your Royal Highness. Yes, I'd say you're in disguise, all right. Thanks for your offer, but I don't see why your butting in would help things any. It's a private affair, if you know what I mean, but thanks just the same.
I have observed you looking up at that clock in the tower on the edge of the park.
Why shouldn't I? Madison Square, the public park. I look at anything I want.
Clocks are shackled on the feet of mankind, my common friend. The face of that clock is actually. Numbers are as unreliable as those on a lottery ticket. Its hands are those of a swindler determined to lead you to your ruin.
I must say, Your Highness, you have a way with words.
Let me entreat you to throw off that clock's humiliating bonds. You must cease to order your affairs by that insensate monitor of brass and steel.
Now, look, I'm not normally a clock watcher, but my wristwatch needs to go in for repairs.
I know human nature as well as I know the trees and the grass. I'm a master of philosophy, a graduate of fine art. Why, there are few mortal misfortunes that I cannot overcome. I've read your countenance, and I find honesty, indeed nobility, as well as distress. I beg you to accept my aid.
10 minutes to 7.
Why divine that the cause of your distress is a comely young shepherdess who makes a claim upon your heart?
Whoa, I'm out of here.
Remain!
What?
Remain, I command you.
Well, I'll give her 10 minutes and I'm off. I'll join you in confiding all clocks, my royal friend. I'll throw you in shepherdesses too.
Sit down! I do not accept your addition. Women are the natural enemies of clocks, and as such, they are the allies of those who seek liberation from those monsters that measure our follies and limit our pleasures. If you won't confide in me, at least relate your story.
Why not, Your Highness? Do you see that house at the edge of the park? The one beside the clock tower? The one with 3 upper windows lighted?
I do.
Well, a little while ago, I stood in that house with the young lady that I was engaged to marry. I'd been doing wrong, my dear prince. I'd been a naughty boy, and she had heard of it. I wanted to be forgiven, of course. We all want women to forgive us, don't we, prince?
Speak for yourself, my common friend.
Well, she said, I want to think it over, she continued. One thing is certain, I will either fully forgive you or will never see your face again. There will be no halfway business. Then she made her proposition. At exactly 6:30, she said, you should look at the middle window on the top floor of this building. If I decide to forgive you, I'll wave a white silk scarf. If I do that, you'll know I've forgiven you and you may come to me. If you see no scarf, then everything between us is ended forever. And that, Your Royal Highness, is why I've been watching that clock. The time for the white silk scarf to flutter was 20 minutes ago. Do you wonder that I'm a little disturbed, my Prince of Rags?
Let me remind you once again. Women are the natural enemies of clocks. Clocks are an evil. Women are a blessing. The white silk scarf still made flutter.
Never in my realm.
Trust me.
You don't know Marion. She's always on time, to the minute. That was the first thing that attracted me. Now she's given me the back of her mitten instead of her scarf. I ought to have known at 6:31 that my goose was cooked. My heart will flutter no more.
Not so fast, O commoner of little faith.
Look, the jig's up. I'll go west on the 11:45 train tonight with my best friend Jack Milburn. I'll try Jack's ranch in Montana for a while. Then maybe I'll sail for the Hawaiian Islands. Oh well, good night, Your Highness.
Wait, my common friend, till the clock strikes 7. I have wealth and power and knowledge above most men. Stay by me until then. This woman shall be yours. You have the word of the Crown Prince of Valley June. On the day of your marriage, I will give you $100,000 and a palace on the Hudson. Just promise me one thing.
Yeah, what's that?
There must be no clocks in the palace.
Why?
Because they measure our follies and limit our pleasures. Do you agree to my terms?
Of course. Clocks are a nuisance anyway. Always ticking and chiming and gonging and making you late for dinner. Look there, now it's 7:03.
I think I'll sleep a little. It has been fatiguing. You'll find me holding court in this park every evening when the weather permits. Come to me when your wedding day is set. I'll give you a check for the palace.
Thanks, Your Highness. It doesn't look as if I'll need that palace, but I appreciate the offer just the same. Oh, my. Sleep already. Well, good night, sweet prince.
Oh, hey, what's going on here?
Good evening, officer.
Yeah, poor Dopey Mike. You know this chap?
Never saw him until tonight.
Hits the pipe every day. He comes out here to sleep it up. And Dopey Mike was a pox bum long before I joined the force 20 years ago. On his last legs, I guess.
Well, that's it.
You still haven't fixed that clock.
Fixed? What time is it?
Let's see. It's exactly 29 minutes past 6.
But the clock.
It's been running fast for a week now. Now, this watch of mine never varies us.
Oh, thank you, sir. She's forgiven me.
Hey, don't you know not to hug an officer? What pipe are you hitting?
Look, the scarf.
What? Why are you dancing?
The scarf in the window, look.
Calm down. I had to run you in.
Marion loves me. And she loves me after all.
Ha ha, so we found the repairs of love bugs after all. 2.5 in Madison Square. And one night you waving a scarf matter from a window across the street. Well, don't bet this last chap and his man are pushing a fancy baby carriage around the park sooner rather than later. Well, goodbye for now.
Thank you for listening to Sherry's Playhouse.